Blog Talk Radio.
Arizona area of Regis Leeds. We're live here presented by the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. If it is the second Monday of each month and Tuesday, it is Understanding Autism starring Kim Isaac and Paul Alden. I'm Dave Isaac, the host. Kim and Paul, how are you?
Doing all right.
Doing well.
Doing well. We got a great show today. I would say Paul Alden all the way from Houston, Texas. And how was the trip? How's the weather?
About the same as always.
Really?
Well, it's actually kind of cool. Houston can't make up its mind. Houston doesn't know what seasons are.
Really?
One day it's 50, the next day it's 95. You have no idea.
It's true.
That sounds like Denver a little bit.
Where
it's cold, it's hot, it's this.
It'll be snowing and then sunny and yeah.
Sounds like my first wife. Okay, anyway, let's go right back to that topic.
Well, we thought we had a lot of new listeners, so Kim and I were going to introduce ourselves again just for.
Yes, I think that's a great idea. Kim, why don't you start?
Yeah, we're so excited. This is our first show on Blog Talk, so we're really excited to have all of you join us and looking forward to your comments and questions. And my name is Kim Isaac. I'm an autism specialist. I've been in the field for almost 17 years. Currently, I specialize in working with teenagers and adults on the autism spectrum, and I have a professional certification in relationship development intervention. And as far as education goes, I have degrees in psychology and counseling studies. So
not just degrees, you have a master's.
Well, yeah.
Come on, let's give you credit here.
Okay. Yes.
Too shy, right?
An undergraduate degree in psychology and a master's in counseling studies.
That's impressive.
Thank you.
I was in Minnesota when you graduated.
Thank
it was
you.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
Paul.
Okay, well, I'm Paul Loden. I don't have any fancy degrees, but I do have 7 years' experience with autism because I was diagnosed with Asperger's 7 years ago. I am now 30, and I've spent that 7 years learning what I can about it and talking to people about my experiences on the spectrum.
Well, that's excellent. That's why I love the show. It's such a unique combination. I don't think there's any show around that has this unique combination. Direct experience. Someone like Paul, so articulate and remarkable, I think. I said it before, but the way you articulate things and the way you are so willing to help others not go through some of the same experiences that you did to help them is priceless, invaluable. I appreciate it.
And I hear that all the time. I mean, truly, some of these people who can't speak, you know, or communicate, some of the things that you've shared really resonate to people who aren't able to voice it for themselves. So it is very much appreciated. So today we have a very special guest here in studio on our remote location. We have Ray Morris with us. And actually, I know he has a lot to his biography here. do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself before we get started?
First of all, hi.
Hello, Ray. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. My name is Ray Morris. Where to start with? I'll start with the most important part. Been married for 27 years to the same woman. And yes, I would do it again. It's been a wonderful journey. My oldest boy, Zachary, who is 20, he will be 25 next month, has autism and severe cognitive delay. A typical boy, I call him typical, is Tyler. He's 23 years old. And Kelly and I, we've been through a wonderful journey, I say that now, in dealing with Zachary and his autism and how to try to maintain a healthy married family. And in doing that, try to give Tyler positive role models of understanding how a man and a woman interact in a marriage and trying to keep that constant. But also, I work for Scottsdale Fire Department. I'm an engineer paramedic there, been there since 1986. And also, my dad, in 1969, he became a quadriplegic. And so for 32 years, he was a quad until he passed away. Then I know what he became. But so I grew up pushing him around in a wheelchair. Back then, there was really no social services. And one of his greatest fears was the house catching on fire and being able to lay there and know he needs to get out of the house, but not having the physical ability to do that. So then with that, and then Zachary and his autism and being in the fire service, I really saw a big need and lack of communication between first responders and people with disabilities and autism in being prepared for emergencies and disasters. I've been on hundreds of calls involving autism and seeing that disconnect between the emergency service personnel and families that are seeking help, and they call the fire department for help, and fire departments not having the knowledge base of how to interact with autism. And then also in disasters, families not being prepared to be self-sufficient for 96 hours in the event of a disaster.
I think that's great. And you're founder, CEO of Dads for Special Kids.
Yes.
You wrote a book, a manual. Would you call it a book, a manual for?
I call it a guidebook.
A guidebook.
Yes. Emergency disaster preparedness for people with functional needs and their families.
Now, is that?
That's hard to make into a clever.
No. Yeah. Acronym. Maybe you could do that with your Asperger's.
Yeah, I could look at it and try to come up with something.
I'm sure you can. By the end of the show, too, I'm certain of it.
Yes. Fairly roll certain. The gauntlet down.
So this guidebook was of years of experience of watching what is needed to save lives, basically.
Yeah, basically, yes. It's seeing firsthand on 911 calls and disasters, but then also seeing the results of, you know, the hurricanes going through the Gulf, Superstorm Sandy, all the disasters, and how it's the functional needs disability population and autism that suffers the greatest. They're the ones that have the poorest outcome in emergencies and disasters.
I suspect this guidebook would be good for people off the spectrum, too.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Very much so.
I took one of Ray's training classes, and I was just blown away, I mean, for multiple reasons. I mean, one, it certainly brought up a lot of questions about some of the individuals I work with and, one, their range of abilities. So, you know, some people with autism are, you know, physically able to move themselves and also cognitively understand. But then you have a wide range of people who aren't, who would have a very hard time moving quickly if they had to, you know, physically manipulating their body in and out of spaces, being very scared by commotion and things like that. And so I had never really considered that. And then on a personal note, just realizing that I really was unprepared myself. And I felt like I want to be a good role model and example. And I would love to, you know, we're very excited to have you to transfer your knowledge to so many people that really, really don't know what they don't know.
So. And I do want to compliment, she was the best student we've had. I've gotten to over 200 people through the workshops that I'm doing that have a grant through the Arizona Developmental Disabilities Planning Council. And you have been the best student so far.
Thank you. That's very
Is very good. Yeah.
So I was thinking maybe you can start off by kind of describing to us, you know, what are some of the most key points that you want to share with the community in terms of some of their first steps towards thinking about this?
The first step is just realizing you have a responsibility to be prepared. You cannot rely upon the fire service and the government to come to your aid in a disaster. I know as a fireman, I want to be there for everybody. When you call for help, I want to go. I want to help. But in a disaster, it's going to be overwhelming, and I'm not going to be able to be there. So trying to get people to realize they need to take responsibility for their own safety, to be self-sufficient for 96 hours. But in that is, what does that look like? Self-sufficiency for me is going to be different than for somebody else because my needs are going to be different. Zachary's needs are going to be extremely different. You know, we have to look at what his needs are to keep his independence and keep him safe for 96 hours in the event of a disaster. All the things that go around that. And if I'm not able to be at home, because the fire department is going to ask me to be on duty in a disaster, so who can backfill me at home to help keep my family safe?
So it's all in the planning.
It's all in the planning.
And that's just good anytime, anywhere, any place, whether it's business, life. And so many people do not do planning, which is unfortunate.
Right.
But this is specialized planning, and it's priceless.
Yes. It's specialized planning, and it's unique for everybody. And what we do is we have a 3-hour workshop that we go through, and we start at the very basics, you know, of what do you do when your smoke detector goes off at home? You know, like in my house, smoke detector goes off. Who's responsible to get Zachary out of the house? You know, how are we going to get them out of the house? And where do we go once we get outside the house? So let me ask you that. That's interesting because if, let's say, there's other people, caregivers,
mm-hmm.
let's say you, your wife, are not in the house, one of the first things you do, you instruct people, hey, we have a plan
mm-hmm.
if this happens. So anyone who's there also has the same knowledge, or at least they have the instructions to do what you would already know.
Yes. Yeah, we have it set up with our family. Is our support system involves myself, my wife, Kelly, who's, I love her, and Tyler. And he's in a family right now, but in a year, he'll move on. You know, he'll probably move out of the house. And then we have Zachary's respite providers, and they're all part of the plan. We've talked with them. We've sat down with them and said, this is our plan. How much of involvement can you be in it? And then do you have a plan that enables you to be there for Zachary? You know, and if you have to evacuate the house, here's our meeting location. Here's a place you can go if you're not able to go back into the house. And we know where they're going to go. For example, a disaster befalls the city, cell service is going to be down. They're not going to be able to talk on the phone. So we know where they're going to go with Zachary. So we now can go to those locations and make contact with them. So do you have backup locations, too,
yes.
in
case there's disasters within that the certain locations?
I try to be realistic. It's just we have our location that we meet outside the house in the event of a fire or something like that, and then we have a meeting location in the neighborhood that we can go to, and then we have our out-of-city location, which is my mother-in-law's house. You know, that we know if something happens, we can't communicate. Kelly needs to leave the city with Zachary. Well, she's going to go to her mom's house. I know that she's going to go there.
So it's key that you really collaborate with all the people that you're involved with, and then everybody knows the final set plan. Something that really stood out to me in your class, and if you're comfortable talking about it, is the plan you made for your son, and I very clearly remember this, in terms of being able to get out of his room.
Uh-huh.
And I remember there was some kind of issue with that, and you were so creative on how you resolved that with your other son. I think it would be very beneficial for people to hear about something like that.
Yeah, this is pretty funny. It's Zachary and Tyler's room. They're 18 months apart. Tyler's younger, and Zachary's older, but Zachary has autism and a cognitive delay. But their rooms share a common wall. And there's a long hallway, and we have a vaulted ceiling, two-story house, typical southwestern homes. And our master bedroom's down the hall. Well, if there's a big fire, there's no way we're going to get from our bedroom to Zachary's room. And first of all, before going further, please sleep with your bedroom doors closed, everybody. Doors are designed to be closed because they will keep the smoke out of your room. Smoke detector will go off. And your room will be safe, won't be full of smoke. But if you have your door open, that smoke's just going to come in your room, and you're going to suffocate, never wake up, and you'll die in your sleep.
Actually, I have a quick question, not to derail too much. How often should people be checking their smoke detectors and, I mean, doing some checks around the house to make sure things are working like they should?
At least, real world, you're supposed to do it once a month. But in reality, if you could do it every 6 months.
Oh, wow.
Or for us, it's whenever I cook at home, smoke detectors.
Okay. That's my policy, too.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to your – I'm sorry. I had to ask because I think – that I mean, actually, I'm shocked to hear 1 month. I'm very, very, very behind. But but anyway, your plan. So if you couldn't get to Zachary, you know, due to the distance, your plan was really interesting.
It was – the plan originally was Tyler – we worked with Tyler. Okay, Tyler, fire alarm goes off. Open your door up. If it's smoky, close your door. Stay in your bedroom. Open up your window and scream and wait for the firemen to get there, and the firemen will come get you. And Tyler's like, okay. And then as he got a little bit older, he must have been about 3.5, 4 years old, looks at me and he goes, Dad, what about Zachary? I says, well, don't worry about Zach. That's mom's and my responsibility. We'll take care of him. He goes, but if you can't get to him, how are the firemen going to know where he's at? And I go, well, we'll let them know when they get there. And he goes back, well, what happens if you can't get out of the house? I'm like, all right, you little pain in the butt. And he looks and he goes, well, Dad, he goes, well, I'll just go in Zachary's room and I'll open up his bedroom window because it faces the driveway. And he goes, I'll just throw toys and let the firemen. He goes, by the way, I will throw Barney out and let the firemen know that this is where we're at. And I'm like, well, how are you going to get in his room? He goes, oh, just kick through the wall. So, and I'm like, actually, that will work. So we taped off a little section of the common wall, the drywall, put a hammer there, and if there was a fire, he would knock through the drywall, crawl through into Zachary's room, open up the bedroom window to let the firemen know that that's where they were at. Incredible.
Which is really seriously important. I mean, I work with so many individuals who are nonverbal, who couldn't be or wouldn't know to scream, wouldn't be able to scream, and to have that kind of plan is just so valuable.
And Tyler, he's the one that came up with it. So, and he wanted the responsibility. He accepted it. It wasn't something we imposed upon him because we always told him, you are not responsible for Zachary. That's mom and dad's job, not yours. But he wanted to do that. He thought it was cool to be able to kick out the drywall, which is a typical, you know, 3-4-year-old little boy. Like, that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting. Tyler must, he's so compassionate, evidently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's so evident. You got to be proud of both yours.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah.
They're both special in their own unique ways. There's no way of comparing them, and love them both.
You know? That is so cool. Let me ask you, you know, boy, this could probably be a series of shows because I've generated probably 100 questions already just at the beginning. But one is probably bothersome, and as a fire person, in the fire department, the question is how many people – do you believe out there in the public know they should have a plan? And the second part is people that know they should have a plan, do they really have a plan?
I think you have to look at the demographics. If those that have a functional need, a disability, they know that they need a plan, and they probably know more than those that have economical resources that insulate them from disasters, you know, because they have resources. So the disability population knows, but they don't have the resources and they don't have the knowledge of how to develop a plan.
And sometimes not, like when you say resources, another thing that comes to mind is people who understand their children.
Right.
You know, and I know you said you have a respite provider and you have your son at the moment, your other son, but I know a lot of people who don't have siblings, they don't have family in the state, they may be really short on respite people and, you know, and therapists and things. And so resources just being, you know, collaborating with other people is something. And then once you do that, them understanding your child enough to be able to be, you know, as supportive and, you know, obviously the safety is the first thing, but the reactions of something, you know, from these individuals, something so startling and scary, whether it's just hearing the smoke alarm, I mean, with sound sensitivities or mom and dad aren't there. What am I mean, just all the emotional trauma that these guys go through. So when I think about planning, I think about, you know, really, when you think about your resources as people, as I would think
it's relationships. It's what we try to do is when we do a workshop, we try to connect up families. So it's like they could support each other. You're more apt to do something when you're in a relationship with somebody else to do something. If I leave it to you, you know, a person to do it by themselves, they're not necessarily not going to do it or do it that well. So we try to get people to work together so, you know, my family can support your family, you know, and being prepared and be a resource to each other.
That's such a great idea for families out there. I know a lot of families are, you know, involved in some of the parent support groups out here. And so if you're listening and you're actually not, it's probably a good idea to get involved for a lot of reasons. But that idea of having, another family, especially for, Arizona is kind of interesting, and I know we have listeners all over the world, but we're kind of a transition state.
Oh.
So it's really rare that somebody's from here, although I think you are, right?
My wife's third generation.
Okay. But so people come here from other places, and, you know, most of the time they don't have a lot of close people to them. So networking with groups.
Yeah, and it's just that support, you know, helping each other out in relationships.
So I was thinking about your story with your son and how would they know someone's in there. I was wondering, when you go out on a call, like how much information do you have about where you're going, like whether it's a 911 call versus an alarm system or some neighbor saw smoke, or if they have a nicer home security system, is there any information from that or anything like that? Like how much do you know, and could there be technological solutions to some of this? My first thought was just a window sticker letting people know which room the kids are in, but...
Actually, he does have some amazing
stuff
here.
You just opened up a pen.
And I love it. No, this is amazing, because this is...
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
People might not want window stickers saying there's a disabled kid in this room, go in. I was like, well,
right.
What about a light that comes on when the smoke detectors go off? A window light that just comes on when the smoke detectors go off, so first responders can immediately see this room, and this room are lit up. We need to go check those rooms. So how much do you know when you go to a house about what's going on there?
In the real world, just whatever information we get from the 911 caller. You know, a lot of times we go check smoke in the area, or we cruise around and we're like, yeah, there's smoke, and all of a sudden we turn a corner and house is on fire. You know, we have no information about that individual home.
Okay.
Or what's in there.
So it needs to be something that you can see upon arrival.
Arrival. And that's where in the guidebook I created, it's called a self-disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where individuals that have a functional need, disability, autism, whatever it is, it's in the very back of the book.
Yeah, I saw the self-disclosure.
Yeah.
I was like, well, it seems like that's useful, but at the same time, you know, there may be problems where, like, my other question was, if you're in an area where you don't necessarily have that opportunity, who do you talk with first at the fire station? Do you talk with some sort of regional person to put together a program? Do you talk with the individual fire station that comes to your house?
Right. Well, I've got a collaboration with Scottsdale Fire Department and Mesa Fire Department.
Well, I'm from Texas, so that's a little far away.
This is a good
We'll deal with Texas later. It's all unique.
Yeah.
Well, it's where people choose to self-disclose. And we get a pro class, we go through what self-disclosure is. But basically what it is you're choosing to let your first responders know about your disability, your special considerations prior to an event.
Mm-hmm.
So this information is put into the computer aid dispatching system.
Okay.
So like when my house address comes up, there's information that pops up, says our address, Zachary Morris, autism, severe cognitive delay, unable to self-rescue himself, sleeps in a bedroom above the garage, grand mal seizures, cognitive delay, my cell phone number so they can contact if somebody's not at the house. And so as the firemen are going to the house, it pops up on their computer screen.
Okay.
So they know before they even get to the house, hey, high probability of a rescue here.
That's what I was wondering about is how much,
if you've been
given a certain street, what you'd know about that street.
Right. Do you go down, how do people go about that process if they choose to disclose in that way? What would people do?
I would personally say I wanted to disclose and I lived in Houston for some unknown reason.
Near Houston.
Near Houston. I would go down to my local fire station,
mm-hmm.
and I would knock on the door and say, hey, I want to self-disclose to you. I want you to know about Zachary prior to the emergency. I want you to know it. Put it into your commuter CAD system.
Okay.
However it may be. You know, it may be a three-ring binder in a smaller department. Like we're here in the Phoenix area, all the fire trucks are connected.
Mm-hmm.
There's no jurisdictions. So it's all in the computer. And the way we set it up in Scottsdale and Mesa is that information is updated every 3 years. If it's not updated, it falls off the system. Because as a fireman, I want pertinent, relevant information.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to – I'll risk my life a lot to save what's savable, but I won't risk my life to save what's already lost.
Mm-hmm.
So if people go down to their local station and do this, I know there's kind of a big question about HIPAA, and some people are – oh, okay.
HIPAA violation.
Ah.
Because they're choosing.
Yeah, you're disclosing your own information.
Okay, but I mean within the station, obviously it's secure and it stays only in your database and there's no way of –
No.
Getting it out.
Yeah. Unless somebody comes and borrows a fire truck.
Okay.
In which case, there's a few other problems.
That's a big trouble.
Yeah. It's pretty easy to spot.
Good point.
Now, you mentioned in the workshops, the first thing was the smoke detectors that you talked about. What are some of the other topics? Because we probably don't have time for all of them, but I think it would be very valuable at least go through the topics, maybe pick a few to elaborate on. So people get a little flavor of perhaps what they're not doing that they should be doing.
I say, how to get out of your house, and where's your meeting place? Key thing, you know. So everybody knows where that place is, where you're going to meet at. There's that one, and then just communication. For example, you're at work, and your wife and family is at home, and a disaster befalls, and you can't make contact with her. Is knowing what she's going to do. You know, so there's peace. There's not that stress and anxiety. So it's, you know, talking about it beforehand that gives you assurance and confidence that, hey, everybody's going to be okay. Everything's going to work out. You know, having communications, for example, like cell phone service is going to be down.
And that's something I hadn't thought about before your class. I mean, honestly, maybe I'm, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but we're so dependent. Yeah, thanks. Oh, you're so funny. I love him.
I'm very
funny. Oh. No, but no, I mean, really, I think we're also dependent on our electronics. That I feel like that has to be hammered in people's heads. You have to, the proactive piece of what you're saying and planning ahead of time so that, you know what, if my phone works, great, but if it doesn't, it's not going to matter because we've already decided.
Have things to charge your phone. What was surprising when Rita hit us is that we had cell phone service but no power.
Right.
And so you're going out to your car every day and sitting with a car charger or maybe trying to find a Starbucks or something that does have power that you can stay in contact, because if you can get in contact with people, you want to stay in as much contact as possible. So don't assume that you won't have cell phone service. Plan both ways.
And that's where we talk about is, okay, your cell phone. Like for me, I need to have a DVD player so Zachary can watch Thomas the Tank Engine. Well, I need power. So buy a small generator that we have. Not to power everything, but to power, to charge the cell phones, to charge so he can watch his TV shows. We can have a light at nighttime, maybe to, you know, run the freezer a little bit to keep it charged up. So it's having those things. Now, where am I going to get fuel for it? Well, that's why we always have a half a tank of gas in our car, that we could take the fuel from that. Drinking water. Where am I going to get my drinking water? I got a place in my home all the time, 50 gallons of water. It's my water heater. That's water I can drink, you know? So I don't have to have all these gallons of water to rotate out in my closet. I have water there. You know?
I was thinking maybe if I have actually a slew of questions too, but I was thinking maybe we could take a short break and come back and continue our conversation with Ray Morris. Very valuable information. Can't hear it enough, actually. I'm getting a good refresher. So.
And we're live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. This is Breakthrough Thinking, presented by the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. And, of course, if you want to hear the show, blogtalkradio.com/BTBN. That's B as in boy, T as in Tom, B as in boy, N as in Nancy. We'll be right back.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heitzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heitzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement offering compromise or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking live from the Rita Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, brought to you by the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. This is Understanding Autism. I'm Dave Isaac, the host, alongside Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon, with special in-studio guest Ray Morris, founder and CEO of Dads for Special Kids. And this has been fascinating, Ray, about your guidebook. It's a must for everyone. And when I say a must, I'm sort of curious, are some of the fire departments trying to promote this at various locations that it should be a must, especially with kids and others that have, you know, certain disabilities that could save their lives? Is there some other program going on?
I don't know of any other programs going on. Right now I got Scottsdale Fire Department is supporting it. Also, the International Association of Firefighters, Local 3878 of Scottsdale, which I'm part of, they are supporting it. They're advocates for this. I've presented a presentation idea to the National International Association of Firefighters in January of 2014 to present this concept and this idea at the national conference. So hopefully we get that, because I think it's a great combination collaboration between firefighters and the disability population and the autism population. I'm waiting to hear back from Autism Speaks. I've put in a grant request to take this program to Flagstaff in Tucson in conjunction with the fire departments.
Have you thought about working with the schools too? I have this picture of your disclosure form going home with every class, you know, in the first week of school.
Cool.
Yeah, they bring it home. They bring it back to school.
Yeah.
A lot less work for the parents having to go down to the station personally or anything.
But the big thing is that the parents need to go through the workshop because they need to learn how to develop a preparedness plan.
Mm-hmm.
I know parents, especially in the younger years of a child with autism, that they're reeling with trying
to process. I was just thinking of the self-disclosure more than the prepared. I mean, they're both important parts, but I think if you can't get them out for the preparedness, at least a self-disclosure form that's come back is a start.
But in a self-disclosure, you're stating you're self-sufficient for 96 hours.
That's true.
Because we want that. And it's sort of a, hey, if you want this little carrot over here, this candy cane to say, you got to do this little work over here.
Mm-hmm.
Because by as a fireman, knowing, having that self-disclosure information, but then also knowing that you're self-sufficient for 96 hours in the event of disaster, that makes my life a lot easier because I know you're safe. I know, you know, life may not be perfect, but you're going to have a healthier outcome because you took some preparedness steps.
So how can people, I mean, I feel so very, very lucky to have you here in Arizona. And again, we have listeners all over the world. What can people do to come together and you know, push or collaborate and spark some of these programs that you're trying to do? Because you're one person that's done an amazing amount of work. But for around the world, a lot of great persons like yourself have to come together. I mean, what can someone do to really address this issue strongly in their community?
I think just reach out to me. I'll give you this guidebook. you could download it, take it, fill it out, get other families in your area to do the same thing. You know, get your whole family to develop a preparedness plan. You know, then reach out to, you know, like if you go to, you know, a therapy group, you know, for your child, get that therapy group to do it. Get the therapist connected. Get them involved in being part of the support network. Help relieve tension and stress on those other families because you're feeling stress yourself. But when you're working with somebody else on a project, the tension, the stress goes down. And you know it as a therapist. When you go in, you can see it in the parents, the stress. But as you start working with them, what happens?
Oh, yeah. I mean, significant affect
change,
you know, because they have people, they have someone to collaborate with and be supportive.
Mm-hmm.
You have that support as well. So how do people, I mean, how would people get in touch with you for this? I mean, are you comfortable to give out your email, or do you want to? Do you have a website?
My email is very top secret.
Well, I just want to be careful because, I mean, you do a lot.
You can go to our website, www.dads4specialkids.org, and all my contact information is on there. Seriously, reach out. I'll give you any information I have to support you and try to connect you up with other people that are trying to do the same thing. And the big thing is getting agencies like I've worked with a lot with the Hope Group here in Phoenix. They're a big proponent, advocate for this, and being a group organization that reaches out to all their client base in this, you know, so it becomes part of the program.
So some of like the regional centers, I know in California, they have regional centers similar to Hope Group, places that that work with DDD. So if you're listening from another state, you know, finding those kinds of, you know, facilities and speaking with them about, right, because they can reach the masses.
Now, you talked about the 96 hours thing.
Yes.
When preparing for something like that, I know that for people who are listening, again, I'm from Houston. We went through a couple hurricanes. 96 hours was not enough for that. But so, you know, it's very regional what kind of problems you might have. He says a half a tank of gas, which here will probably get you to Tucson or somewhere decently distant from Phoenix. In Houston, half a tank of gas doesn't get you outside the city limits when there's a disaster because the roads are full. I know we closed down the southbound lane of I-45 north, and both lanes were going northbound when Rita was coming so that everyone could get to Dallas, which didn't do as much good as we wanted. but so is there somewhere you should go to find out about what kind of disasters and what kind of disaster planning exists for your region? I mean, I know a lot of people wouldn't have predicted that it was likely they would have closed down the southbound lane and might not have been prepared for what that means if, say, you work north of your family member that you want to get to pick them up. So finding out about what kind of local things happen when a disaster happens and what kind of actual preparedness you need to be self-sufficient for 96 hours to have enough gas to get out of the way. Do you talk to your fire department about that, or is there any sort of public agency that you should look for, or are you just kind of trying to have to communicate with the people around you and figure it out yourself?
You start with your state and your city emergency managers.
Okay.
Every state has an emergency manager, and then each city has one. And they have contingency plans set up. Like for in Houston, they knew if something happens, we're going to shut down and make both lanes, you know, northbound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to send everybody to Dallas for some unknown reason. Dallas.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
I would have headed to Austin. I sat out Katrina in Austin. It was just fine. But.
So it's doing that, and then a lot of it just sitting down and looking at what are your local hazards.
Mm-hmm.
Like here in the Phoenix area, heat. That's
absolutely. Oh, wow.
Power outages. How are you going to work around a power outage? You know, every family is different. I have a unique situation with my son's, you know, autism and cognitive delay as everybody else. So you have to look at your own issues, your own, and how do you develop a plan around those to be healthy? And how do you engage other people to support you? You know, for us, if something befalls on the Phoenix, we're not bugging out. We're going to wait 4 days,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I want all the other individuals to leave, get out there, and then we'll follow.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't want to try to travel with Zachary and his autism. It would not be pretty. You know, my wife's hot looking now. If we had to go in a car for 4 to 3 days with him, she's not going to be so attractive afterwards because just that stress. And so, you know, you have to look at those things. What is realistic for you? You know, staying in place a lot of times is the best. Now, how do you get support to enable you to stay healthy while you're staying in place?
I was really very interested in, you know, everybody has this individualized, you know, emergency supply of stuff. And like you said, you have Thomas the Tank Engine, you have the videos, you know, you have this stuff. And I thought that was so interesting because really, truly, those things are part of the true emergency. I mean, when people on the spectrum are, like I said, rushed, everybody's moving quick, the routines are different. I mean, they need all the comforts that you can possibly, you know, reasonably provide. And so I guess I was just thinking if you could talk a little bit about, you know, thinking, expanded thinking on what you would put in your emergency kid. Yeah.
Yeah, it's you have to look at your child. I'll use the word child. What is their normal routine? What are the things that they gravitate towards? You know, and try to have some of those things set up and set aside for you. For like us, we go to Cottonwood. That's where my wife's family lives up, and that's one of our bug out places. But there's already some things up there for Zachary. You know, mm-hmm. a few extra things that we may need, so some less things that we'd have to carry with us. So you try to look at those kind of things. You know, is it a book? Is it a car? Is it a stuffed animal? Is it a blanket? Is it a T-shirt? Is it whatever? Because autism is unique. Okay. Every kid's unique. So you just have to think about those things and prepare for that plan. Don't wait at that moment to try to remember all that stuff that you're going to need. Make yourself a little hit list that you know, I got to grab these things, instead of the heat of the moment trying to remember what do you need. But then also think of your own mental health as the parent, as the guardian. You got to stay healthy so you can take care of them. So bring the things that you're going to need also, you know. How many bottles of wine are you going to need?
No, but this is really valuable because with emergency planning or just in general, I mean, parents have that huge responsibility yeah. for their children, and then having special needs on top of that really amplifies it all. And I think that the calmer and more secure the parent feels, the better decisions they're going to be able to make, mm-hmm. the better they'll be able to comfort
yeah.
their kids. And I think that's just so valuable. And I would think that, you know, at non-disaster times, it would really create a sense of peace.
Yeah.
And order and kind of all the chaos that parents face just in life, to see you have one piece and order,
oh, yeah.
I think would just feel so relieving.
Oh, it's brought so much more security to us as a family. Having a plan, it takes that, like you're saying, that pressure, that stress. Hey, if something does bad happen, we'll be okay. We're not going to be reacting to that. And that's what a lot of parents do with an autism, especially as a younger parents, where it's all reactionary. Because you've never been down this road of autism before. You don't know what to expect. You thought you're going to have a perfectly healthy child, and all of a sudden you have this child with this, what? Autism? What is it? And so you're in this huge learning curve, and now to throw in, hey, got to have an emergency disaster plan. Parents are overwhelmed with it. So it's just one step at a time. You know, if you could start your plan today and then next month work on a little bit more, you're going to be healthier.
Well, I think that's a really important message, too, because I left feeling like, wow, how did I not know this? It seems obvious in some ways, but yeah. then it's like you just kind of take for granted the fact that so many days of your life, you don't have these things
right.
going on. But I like your comfort, your words of comfort in that, just doing small bits of it at a time. I mean, some is certainly better than nothing. And, you know, your workshop is so very thorough, and I think that it's okay for people to know to break it down for themselves
yeah.
and just do little, you know, pieces at a time because it's a lot.
Now you talk about the piece of the parents. How about the perspective of someone on the spectrum? What are they going through? And I think that should be talked about a little bit. Paul, I mean, stepping into, an emergency situation, I know the spectrum is large, yes. And, but you know, maybe go up and down the spectrum a little bit. What would you be thinking? What would someone else be thinking?
Well,
and parents should probably know that too.
Yeah.
You know, again, it depends on their level of understanding, how much they're able to grasp about what's going on, because a lot of people on the spectrum work well with a plan, and if you have a plan that can be applied in whatever disaster is happening, that's probably going to help tremendously. Because if it's something new, then it's a problem. But if it's something like, well, when you hear this sound, that means go to the window and wait, and that sound is the fire alarm, even though that sound is frightening and terrifying, they have something to do. And if they can remember that, if they can understand that, that's going to be tremendously helpful. So a lot of it's going to depend on what that child is able to understand, remember, and do. And so, you know, any time, obviously, you're planning, you need to take into account the capabilities of them, but you shouldn't assume that they're helpless and they're going to need someone to do everything, but rather look at how they can be involved in the plan, because the more they feel like there's something that they can do and they're in control of, maybe the less panicked they'll be and the less they're going to be reacting to what's going on, because they're like, I need to do this, I need to do this, I need to do this, rather than what do I do, what do I do, what do I do? So I think that's probably the biggest thing, is trying to figure out where you can evolve them to decrease the stress and to increase their feeling of agency in what's going on.
I mean, even if it's just – that's such a good point. Even if it's just conveying the plan to them, because I do work with individuals who really – their skills and their ability to carry out actions is not good. But they're able to listen, you know, and you never know sometimes what someone's understanding, but I always go with, I'm going to say it anyway. I'm not going to assume this person's not, you know, hearing me or understanding. And just, you know, explaining to this person, you know what, when this happens, you know, brother's going to come and he's going to do this. And, you know, so if that's their level of involvement, is just being a listener, I think that's totally valuable, that they should be included, just to hear it ahead of time. And, yeah, whether they remember it or not, you know, maybe we don't know. But I think it's valuable to do it anyway.
Now, people on the spectrum, let's say, those who really don't have any understanding, is there some type of intuitive sense that there's a disaster going on?
I mean, I have an answer for that. My thoughts, but Paul, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think it just sort of depends on the child, because sometimes you are so oblivious to what's going around you that if you haven't seen the objective cause, if you don't see the flames and the smoke, people are panicking, but you don't really pick up that emotional sense necessarily,
the context,
and you aren't able to work back from these people are rushing around to something bad is happening. So it can very much depend on the person. And you could end up, I could very easily see where you could end up with someone who really doesn't realize there's a disaster going on while everyone else is panicking and trying to get things done until it's too late. They don't know that they should be keeping away from things or doing something specific to ensure their own safety while everyone else is working on things that at the time seem more important until, unfortunately, it's too late.
And that's, I was pretty much going to say that too, is one of the difficulties in autism for a lot of people is rapid attention shifting and figuring out what's most relevant in that moment. And so, you know, even though they may be hearing commotion and everything, but they might be playing their video games and that's, you know, the single channel of interest. That doesn't mean they don't care and it doesn't mean they're not capable, but it's hard for them to rapidly shift between, you know, things. And then the self-regulation piece of going from I'm comfortable and fine right in the moment, you know, their emotions don't necessarily, you know, change and match ours like a typically developing person would. So I think that's, Paul, I think that's a good point.
Yeah, I find that when doing the program is letting the parents understand your child's going through fire drills at school.
Mm-hmm.
So do a fire drill at home.
That's a good idea.
And then, so it becomes the repetition, they're learning, okay, this is going to happen, this is what's going to do. So now if there is an actual fire at home, there's going to be less anxiety because we've done this before. It's not all new. So you make it a game.
And it provides a framework that they're already used to.
And so then if it's a disaster and you have to evacuate, it's pretty much still the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now, I'm curious about the workshops. How often do you do these workshops? And who do you offer it to? Is it just open to the general public? Is it through an organization? Right now I'm working through Arizona Developmental Disabilities Planning Council, and the workshops have been generally in the Maricopa County area. I have gone down to Tucson, special request from Hope Group, and went down there. It was awesome. So I've been doing here in the Phoenix metro area. But
how
much
do you want to travel?
I would love to go anywhere. I would love to take this program, take it to, not Houston, or outside Houston, but take it anywhere and teach a group of people that understand and say, here, take this. Do it in your community.
It
reach
really
out.
Applies.
Yes.
Yeah. You might get a lot of emails.
Just and take this program and teach it to your community. Make it part of your regular program. I'm trying to work with the state and every child that's receiving DDD services that this is required to be part of their program to get the services, to get funding.
Oh, that's awesome.
They have to have an emergency disaster preparedness plan.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. And what's your goal overall? I mean, I'm sure at some point it would to have this in every household in the country.
Oh, yeah. My ultimate dream is to have that firefighters are going out teaching this to their community in relationship with the agencies that provide services to this population. And that these agencies are reaching out and saying, hey, you know what? we're going to become a shelter for our clients. In the event there is a disaster, our clients come to our location because they're familiar with it, they know it, especially with autism, and that's the general shelter for that population. Beyond One's View, where my son goes to its adult day program, they're looking at becoming a shelter for their population. They have 93 clients. So why not let them come here if they have to have a shelter? Red Cross has agreed, said, yes, we will help support them. We will provide them resources if they need it. So now Beyond One's View is working with their staff to staff it in the event of a disaster. So,
have you found this, like the state of Arizona has been pretty responsive to what you want to do?
Define responsive.
agreeable and not as much bureaucracy.
There's
supportive.
That's a good word.
It's supportive. It's
proactively supportive.
Do you think they like the idea?
Yeah. They like the idea.
Because that's the best you can hope for.
It's on the radar to say it's a blip on the very edge, and it's going to take the right political environment, people to promote it, to make it one of their agendas.
Mm.
But, you know, I've only been doing actual workshops for 8 months now. You know, and like I said, we've done over 200 people. I got 3 months left of funding on the grant. I've exceeded expectations. You know, the number of people we've gotten, the feedback has been great. So I just want to try to get more funding to do it. And really, the funding is just devolved as printing it and putting the guidebooks together.
I think Understanding Autism would be very excited to throw some kind of fundraiser for you.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Let's work on that.
Well, we've been talking about
coming
up with a fundraiser event.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We would love to do that for
so
you.
So we could collaborate on something.
Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very important. I mean, honestly, I'm feeling like I know we're focused on, you know, people with special needs and autism, but I'm feeling like, you know, even though you're going to develop your plan and your family, that you need to actually tell others what your plan is, whether they're involved in your plan or not. You know, here, neighbors, if you wonder where we are, this is our, you know, where we are, this is our plan. And so really the community, autism or no autism, this is something that would help, you know, benefit everybody on different levels, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what Superstorm Sandy came through, Katrina through New Orleans, 80% of fatalities were people with disabilities.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's atrocious. And why? It's because they have the smallest support base, you know.
So would it help to go to Washington and get it at the federal level?
I was back there 3 weeks ago for a policy seminar. Got invited to go back to D.C. And I presented this to a few key individuals. And they're like, oh, wow, really? You know, I don't know what's going to come with it.
I might have someone for you, actually. I'm making notes here because I do have some connections.
Yeah, but you got, you know, it's notes. It's really a Christmas list, so not a nice has something to do with this. You know, I think we could help you out at Washington as well.
And actually, the Breakthrough Thinking has connections as well. I think on other shows you have some potential.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I think this is a great idea, both here locally and in Washington.
Sure.
So, because to me, this would seem... Well, it's obvious everyone should have this, number one, because of human life. And then somehow it could tie into, I suspect, with the insurance companies where there can maybe be rate reductions, perhaps, right?
Oh.
I mean, I'm not an insurance guy, but I'm thinking if you are planning, planning always results in more efficiency, and more efficiency should be a cost-cutting.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, with car insurance, if you have a good record, you get a discount.
Well,
so.
Also, I think if you have smoke alarms or detectors, I think you get discounts,
discount,
I believe. And
right.
So I think there's something here.
I'm
surprised
there are people who don't, but not have them.
And when you have a fundraiser, maybe we could nominate or select an official printer for this, and I bet they could do some printing
Absolutely.
For you
to
contribute. Because you said most of the cost, I believe, is for printing these, and that could be good. How about facilities? Do you need facilities?
Hosting facilities would donate it, like Hope Group donated their facility.
Oh, okay. That should be pretty easy.
Oh, yeah. There's places wanting to do it, you know. It's
just
you know,
not Houston.
Not at Houston.
Yes.
We'll work there slowly.
We'll work around.
No, actually, I'm very glad you're bringing this up because we definitely, there's a lot of I mean, we're happy to absolutely support any way I can. So we're going to put our heads together and start working this out for you.
Oh, great. Yeah, because I've been printing these at home on my home printer.
Oh,
really? My HP.
You're
print.
So amazing.
HP. All right. Go to Costco, get the paper, get the binders from Costco.
Talk to someone at Kinko's. Come on. I have it. It's still cheaper.
Yeah. Because I've just been rolling the money because it's built in the grant. I had to pay myself. I just been throwing the money back in. Yeah.
He is so generous with his time and heart. I have to say, I left there, just thinking, wow, this was amazing. But I left there thinking, wow, you are amazing. I mean, you have this devotion to your family. You obviously work full time, and you're donating so much of your time and heart and effort to take care of the community on and off duty. Yeah. And I just really very much, I respect that.
Well, you need to meet my wife, and then you'll understand it.
Well, we're looking forward to it. We're going to have her actually on the show.
Oh.
Yeah. We're going to contact her about that. You want to actually mention real quick, we have a few minutes left, what it is she does?
She takes care of me. I am a product of her.
Good wife.
Is that quite a job or what? Yes, it is. I'm still under construction. She's a therapist, a licensed therapist, specializing in families that have an individual with functional needs. Does marriage and family counseling.
Nice.
And she does workshops for helping families transition from having a child with a disability to finding new understanding and deal with conflicts. Because when you have a child with special needs, you weren't expecting it. So there's a PTSD you go through. So it's transitioning through that and finding happiness and contentment with it. And realize, hey, when you have a child with a disability or autism, you know what? You're the right parent for that child. That child's the right child for you. Embrace it. Let it change your life and grow and find deep meaning, new meaning in it all. So she does that. That's got
to
be invaluable.
Yeah. It really is. I know, because I know with, parents under, the best of circumstances often have different views on parenting and, what education path you want to take and things like that. With autism, many other decisions have to be made.
Oh, yeah.
And so I could see we're coming together and really uniting on some kind of solid foundation would make that, I know it's hard, but it would make it easier in that you'd be united and less, that element of less stress.
Right.
On some
level. You see it, the parents and moms usually focus on the kid and the dad's out in the peripheral.
Cool. Not all the time, actually.
I have
some really amazing dads like yourself. Yeah. I really do. Paul's dad is one of them. I'm going to give him a shout-out.
Well, you mentioned it, too. I'm the chicken liver here.
Oh, right.
Are you a parent of a child with special needs? Which one?
Actually. No,
I won't say anything
they're not,
on that one.
They're not in the studio today.
All of them.
They're not in the studio, and they don't listen to the show. So.
You're a product of your environment.
No, but really, truly, I mean, I feel like, but I think you make a good point is, sometimes they feel like dads maybe don't feel comfortable getting involved because they feel incompetent on things. And so it sounds like your wife, putting people on the same level, that common ground, would put them both in that place where they could both feel competent.
Right.
So I'm very interested in hearing what she
has. Well, that's why we started Dads for Special Kids. The foundation is supporting and encouraging dads that have a child with special needs to stay in the marriage, to keep the family intact. That's our foundation.
Yeah.
And this
amazing.
Emergency preparedness has just been an offshoot.
Let's get some contact information. We probably only have about a minute and a half. How do they get in touch with you? The website, the phone number, whatever you feel is good to give out.
Website, www.dads4specialkids.org. And then my email is ray@dads4specialkids.org.
And we're going to post this all on our Facebook page for sure to get it out there.
Okay.
And, of course, you can hear the archive on this at various places, breakradioshow.com, blogtalkradio.com/BTBN. You probably posted on
iTunes for autism.
Yeah, so there's a lot of places to listen to this, and I encourage people to re-listen to this because
and
it's valuable.
And pass it to your friends, absolutely.
Yeah, there's no question about it, and we'll send some links for you on Facebook as well.
One last quick question. Would it be possible for us to post an online version of your workshop, a PDF or something, if you've got it?
Oh.
We'll definitely do
that. Oh, that's a great idea.
I'm working on doing a presentation in 20-minute segments of the workshop. So
that is excellent. Well, Ray Morse, thank you so much
for
coming in today. We want to get you back on the show, maybe do some remotes,
sure.
Help you with fundraisers, a bunch of stuff. And, of course, you're the founder CEO of Dads for Special Kids. Kimberly, Paul, see you tomorrow. Any particular topic?
We are. We're going to be talking about transitioning into summer and helping your kids, you know, with that transition in the schedule and, you know, summer vacations and all that sort of thing. So it's going to be a really good show.
Starring Chevy Chase? Okay.
Not that kind of summer vacation.
That is great. And we're broadcasting live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking, sponsored by Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. This is Understanding Autism. We'll see everyone tomorrow, 3 to 4. More Understanding Autism.